We bring in John P. Hancock, Jr., shareholder in Butte Salong, and a law firm specializing in antitrust litigation. John, good morning. It's Howard, David, and Randy Cross. How are you?
Good morning, Howard. Good morning, Randy. How are you today?
Good morning.
Doing well. Let me come right out with guns blazing. Most of the fans are ignorant, including myself, about the legal issues. Otherwise, we would have gone to law school. But having not done that, explain to me how the fans can look forward to a season when there's been virtually no movement in any discussions, and all we've heard is judges' answers, a stay of the lockout. Maybe we'll have an answer tomorrow, maybe Tuesday. As you understand it, where are we as fans?
Well, right now you have a ruling by the judge, Judge Nelson, I believe it was,
right,
who indicated that the lockout was illegal. And the basis for her decision was that the union has decertified. Now, let's break that down. They started out as a union and the owners. And the union has the right, or the employees, in this case the players, to say, we don't want the union anymore. And they can only do that at certain times, and one of those times that they can do that is when the contract expired. So when the contract expired, as a bargaining ploy, they said, we're no longer a union. Well, once you are no longer a union, then the owners, the employers in this case, cannot act together because there's no collective bargaining agreement that's a shield, okay? Because if they get together and say, okay, we're not going to pay these people, we're competitors. If all the newspapers or all the radio stations or all the factories got together and said, we're not going to pay our employees this much money, that'd be a violation of antitrust. If they get together in a collective bargaining, an employers association, which is what the NFL is, then they can say, okay, as part of negotiations, our economic weapon is to lock you out, and that's what they did. And the judge said, in this case, you don't have a union anymore. And so, therefore, when you lock out, you are violating the antitrust law, and I'm going to stop that. I'm going to put in an injunction. And what she found was that there was irreparable harm because the players, by being locked out, couldn't train, couldn't get ready for the season. So that's where we were till we went to the Eighth Circuit. And what the Eighth Circuit looked at is, one, they saw that if there is no lockout, if there is no union, and they didn't make a ruling, they're just looking at both sides at this point, then there could be chaos, because what rules apply? And they said, we're going to stay that, stop the enforcement of that ruling until we get a chance to look at it. And so as a result, that put the lockout back in place, and they're going to rule at some point, I don't know what their timetable is, whether or not there really is a union in existence. If there is no union, then there can't be a lockout. If there is a union, there can be a lockout. Now, I'm not sure I simplified that, but that's where we are at this point.
You know, along those lines, in 1989, the union decertified, and over the course of about 3.5-4 years, they negotiated while football continued. When they got back at it, they came to an agreement. The union had to first recertify before they could authorize the deal itself. There was some collateral damage from a losses standpoint for the league because of they had enacted Plan B and other things that were ruled wrong. They lost a lot of money on that. If they go back to 2010 rules, what are some of the downsides? I know there's a huge upside for the fans that the game continues, but what are some of the downsides for either party in this if they just go back to 2010 rules and go?
Well, it depends on when you say 2010 rules. If the judges rule that the union acted in bad faith, or it was a bargaining ploy, and not and trying to decertify in the middle of negotiations, then you have a lockout. if the judges continue the ruling of the lower court, then you have no lockout, and what you are bound by is the individual contracts. And then beyond that, I'm not sure where you are. I'm not sure how you have a draft, because a draft is part of a collective bargaining agreement. I'm not sure how you work it. You have in free agency, and if the owners, the judge's ruling is upheld, then the owners act at their own risk, just as they did in 1989 to 1993, by doing things in a collective manner. That is reducing the take that the players get. You know, now they get a 60-40. And they're one of their, at least last time I checked, one of the things they wanted was to take $1 billion more before they split it 60-40. Well, if they go do that, then they may have to refund that $1 billion ultimately. So those are the risks. There's a lot of risk because you're operating, if they continue to operate as if there is an association, that is, the Players Association is a union, even in face of this, then they run a lot of risk if what they do collectively could be found to be a violation of the antitrust laws.
John, you just brought up a lightning bolt, and I don't know if you realized it. You asked a question that I have not heard brought up to this point, and I'm wondering why it has not been a big issue. And that is, you said, well, how can you have a draft, which is part of the collective bargaining agreement? Why wouldn't the players and their representatives stand up and say, no, we're not going along with the draft? Because if we're gonna have a draft, then we want free agency. Why has that not been a bigger issue?
They don't want to address that, I don't think. That's the gorilla in the room that nobody wants to talk about. Without a collective bargaining agreement, how do you parcel up the individual rights to each player? And they can have an agreement among themselves and hope that no one challenges it. This is the way we're going to divide the players. I mean, put yourself in any other field. All the broadcasters in the U.S. get together and say, okay, we're going to take the most recent grads from all the top broadcasting schools, and then we'll decide where they go. And some of you get to go to New York, and some of you get to go to Portland, and some of you get to go to Tallahassee, and some of you are in Wichita. I mean, apply that situation. And you would have a problem with some of those people say, I don't want to demean any place, you know, but I have a problem. I'd rather go to Boston or New York or Chicago. And they don't want to address that, but that's one of the issues. I mean, they got away with it for years before it was challenged for free agency. But right now, free agency is the rule. And I don't know what would prevent a college kid coming out and say, no, I want to go talk to the New York Jets, or I want to talk to somewhere else. I don't want to talk to you. And as you realize, nobody's signing anybody to contracts at this point.
Well, you can't.
Because of that issue.
Yeah, well, you can't. But look, with no union, to me, there's a potential for chaos. Because, yeah, and I'm just wondering why we're worrying about how to whack up $9 billion, which is the overriding issue, and I understand that, but there are so many other issues that I have not heard brought up, and now as I'm thinking along these lines, you have no unions, so why are we even talking to you? Why don't each individual player bargain for themselves? I know it seems a little silly, but why not?
Well, the reason why not is because other than 20 to 50 employees, not a lot of the players have individual bargaining leverage. That's why. You've got the quarterbacks, the top wide receivers, the top whatever. They have leverage. The rest of them don't, so they don't want to get into that situation where they do it individually. I mean, the whole hope is this works out. That's why you're not bringing up these issues. Although my understanding is the owners, in arguing that this injunction should be stayed, argued just that this would bring chaos, that we have no rules if there is no union. You know, And so I think that that's their concern as well. That's one of the reasons I think the Eighth Circuit stayed the injunction, because there is an argument that there's chaos without a union. What rules are we applying for? I mean, if I recall correctly, the owners had told everybody, you can't talk to anybody, you can't sign anybody, can't do anything till we get a ruling. Because one of the things that happened, I believe, and Randy, you were there, you might have known this a little better, is that they got free agency as a result of the decertification back in 89-93, because that was the rule. Everybody could sign where they wanted to and got the best offer. And so those draft choices would have just as much right to be free agents at this point in time as the players who are coming out of their contracts right now.
Absent a credible challenge to free agency in the draft, absent a direct attack or suit or challenge in the courts on both those things, how can the decertification not be taken as a negotiating ploy, just simply as a negotiating ploy? Why should it be taken seriously absent that?
I think that's what's troubling the Eighth Circuit, because when you understand collective bargaining, the idea is that both sides have an economic weapon. And obviously the employees, the players in this case, have the right to strike. And the owners have the right to lock out. That's their legal right to do. And I think, at least I would be troubled, I don't know if the Eighth Circuit is, I would be troubled with the fact that the union in this case is using a ploy to remove the economic weapon of the owners, the lockout. And that causes an imbalance. And collective bargaining agreements don't work unless you have a balance. That's why I think the court struck down that initially the agreement with the, or at least says you can't benefit from that agreement with the networks, because that destroyed the leverage. I'm going to get paid for a broadcast that aren't going to happen. That destroyed the balance. So here you've got the Eighth Circuit troubled by two things. One, if they rule in favor of the owners, they will be literally forcing employees back into a union that they said they wanted to decertify, which they have a legal right to do. On the other hand, if they rule in favor of the players, they're really destroying the concept of equality in collective bargaining. You're taking away the owner's right to lock out to get what they want. So I think they're trouble, and I think that's one reason they may not rush to make a decision to see if these people can sort it out. But the problem is, you just hit it right now, you're negotiating with a union that doesn't exist. It's a players' association, which is the way it was for years and years. You can talk to them, you can work out something, but you can't really collective bargain with them because there is no union. They've been decertified. So
we're talking with John P. Hancock, Jr., shareholder in Butts Along, a law firm. I could speak to you for an hour, but we don't have that kind of time. So the final question for me is, at the outset, it seemed that the initial game plan of ownership was, we can outlast the players, we are better healed financially, and players have already started to miss some money because they have training camp bonuses that they're not getting. So right now it's starting to hit home a little bit, and while the fans right now, I believe the majority of the fans are on the side of the players right now, I think that the owners are still in and have the most leverage because they've got something the players don't have. They've got the checkbook, and they're not writing any checks until they're ordered to do so.
And that's the way it's supposed to work. I mean, that's the union has the right to strike. The owners have the right to lock out. You might not like it, but that's the way collective bargaining is supposed to work. And right now, if they uphold the lockout, the owners definitely have a leverage at this point in time.
You know, just an observation, but to use an old semi legal term, it sounds like this baby just needs to be cut in half.
I hate to say that, but you're correct. Someone has to compromise at this point in time because the two rulings are awful for at least one side, and I think that's why the Eighth Circuit, again, I'm guessing as to why. They may just not have time to look at it. I don't know. I mean, but I think they're trying to put a little pressure by saying, we don't know how we're going to rule. We're going to look at this. You guys need to cut the baby in half because we don't want to. You know, we're going to have to come down on one side or the other. And both, depending on which side you come down, it's going to be a tough situation. I can see a lockout ending the season if they allow them to do it. By the same token, if they don't, I don't know what the rules are. Now, we'll have a season. That's the one good thing. If they rule in favor of the players, we will have a season. I'm not sure where free agency goes. I'm not sure where the other things go, but we will have a season. So that's the good news. At least if they rule at this point in favor of the players, we'll have a season because they'll be ordering it to have a season.
Appreciate it, John. Thanks for your time.
Anytime. Take care, guys.